Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, MyLowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to MyLowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas, and this is the episode I've been looking forward to the most ever since the end of last season, because it's the first episode previewing this season. We have real college football games. The entire country is playing on Saturday. I haven't slept in 4 days, 5 days, maybe something like that, because, gosh, this slate is absolutely incredible. We're going to go through every SEC game to the depth where we need to, right? Some of these games don't need to be talked about too much, but we'll go through every SEC game and some of the other top games around the country this year. I don't want to waste any more time. We're just going to go chronologically, so like Clemson LSU, that'll be towards the end of the episode, but we're going chronologically with every SEC game, starting off with Central Arkansas and Missouri, the game everybody is waiting for. This game is really only interesting because of the Missouri quarterback battle, which I talked about earlier in the last week. Sam Horn and Bo Prabula are still battling it out for the QB1 job in Columbia, Missouri. That is very alarming that that's still going on into the regular season. Now, is it going to be a problem against Central Arkansas? No, it's not. But just that general premise of no quarterback taking that job yet is a concern. So we'll see how both those guys look in that game. I expect Ahmad Hardy to get a good bit of carries, probably not playing in the second half because they need him healthy to keep running the ball. But Missouri should win that game handily. But then Friday night, we get our first legit showdown in Auburn versus Baylor. Auburn is favored by 2.5, I believe, is the updated line. But Auburn is the short favorite in this one. And starting off with Baylor here. Baylor is bringing back 77% of their production on offense from a unit that was one of the best in the Big 12 last year. Sawyer Robertson, a quarterback for them, threw for over 3,000 yards, had a 62.2% completion rate, threw 28 touchdowns and only 8 picks. They also have Bryson Washington at running back, who was over 1,000 yards last year and 12 scores. Defensively, where I think Auburn could take advantage, Baylor does not really profile as a team that can get great pressure on opposing quarterbacks. They do not have a projected starter on that defensive line who had more than 4 sacks last year. That works out perfectly for Jackson Arnold and the Auburn offense, because Arnold, last year with Oklahoma, it was a bad situation. He was always under pressure. He was always rushed. He always had to be kind of a hero, and we saw how it went. It went horribly. So in this opener, you're on the road at a Power 4 team, which is scary on the surface level, but if Auburn's able to give him time, which I think they will because of Baylor's weak-ish pass rush, that's a big advantage. And also for Auburn, because they have 2 transfer offensive tackles coming in Xavier Chaplin and Mason Murphy, it lines up perfectly where this is not one of the better pass rushers they'll face all year, so they can still go against a quality opponent. It's not like they're playing an FCS team. They can go up against a Power 4 defensive line that won't necessarily overwhelm them and have time to really develop and mesh in this game. And giving Arnold time to throw to those elite wideouts is, obviously, it's critical. I don't need to tell any of you that. But it's such a big plus when you can give Arnold time to really go through his options and figure out which elite receiver he wants to throw the ball to on that play. Then defensively for Auburn, Keldrick Falk and Malik Blockton on the defensive line, they need to play very well. That's an absolute need. That's probably the matchup I'm looking at the most, is Auburn's D-line, mainly those two guys, against Baylor's O-line, the running backs, and Sawyer Robertson. Because Auburn's secondary is young, So you need to take pressure off of them, especially early on in the game, so they can get comfortable. And with how good Sawyer Robertson is, not only through the air, he's also pretty solid on the ground. Those two guys need to make him uncomfortable. They need to hit him. They need to make him feel their presence. Because if Robertson is comfortable and this turns into a shootout, that's a lot more pressure back on Arnold. And I think he needs some time to just kind of play relaxed games where he's not necessarily all on his shoulders, so he can get comfortable, get his confidence back, and really start to flow in this Auburn offense. So if Falk and Blockton can really be the two workhorses on this defensive line for Auburn on Friday night, disrupt Sawyer, disrupt the run game with Bryson Washington, and really throw Baylor's offense off balance, that's the recipe for success right there, is your front seven absolutely manhandling the opposing offense. And I think that Falk and Blockton absolutely profile as guys who can get that done. I'm very high on Auburn as a whole this year. I have them going 9-3. If they lose this game, that immediately, it's not a death sentence, but man, a lot of the confidence in this team is going to go away. A lot of it is, because you're favored on the road to the Power 4 team. You really need to win this game as a tone setter. Hugh Freeze goes out there and wins this game. It's not yet a proof of concept that this team is ready for that giant next step, but it definitely keeps you alive. And it is a confidence-boosting win. It's really a standalone game on Friday in terms of games that truly matter. You have Georgia Tech and Colorado that night also, but I think most eyes will be on Waco, Texas. Absolutely massive game for Auburn to win to get off to a good start, because 1-0 and 0-1, we know there's a big difference there. For Auburn this year specifically, I think it's a massive difference. And in terms of betting this game, Auburn is laying 2.5 points. Weirdly enough, I would feel much more confident if that line was at 3 or 3.5 taking Auburn, even though it's over a key number. Given this situation, if sportsbooks were throwing out a 3.5, that's inviting a lot of action on Baylor. Oh, as this home underdog who's getting a field goal week one, Jackson Arnold is terrible. That would incite so much action on Baylor and really tell you everything you need to know about, you know, the books think Auburn is going to win this game. They think they're going to roll. They think they're the better team roster-wise. So having 2.5, I'm still confident. I'm still playing Auburn laying 2.5. But if that line was 3, if that line bumps up to 3 flat or 3.5, that's going to make me feel unbelievably more confident that this really is the right side. But regardless, I do like Auburn laying 2.5. I think their defensive front is going to be able to take care of Baylor, and I believe that Jackson Arnold is going to start showing everybody, like, he's still this really talented guy. He's still this 5-star guy. You just kind of have to get him in the right situation, and he'll be a great player. Moving on to the early slate on Saturday. Yeah, let's just get right into it. Texas and Ohio State. Number 1 versus number 3. Biggest game in the country this week. Playoff rematch. I'm stuttering because I can't even get out all of the reasons why this game is awesome. But obviously, this is a game between two teams who figure to be in the playoff, even though, if you've listened to my stuff, I actually think Texas misses the playoff this year. But two elite teams, both with national championship aspirations. Texas trying to get there, Ohio State trying to defend it. Getting into this game, I'm not worried about Jeremiah Smith as much as I should be. Because in that semifinal game last year, Texas held Jeremiah Smith to one catch for 3 yards. Texas knows what to do against an elite receiver. They do it every week in the SEC, and Jeremiah Smith he's the best receiver in the country. I'm not comparing him to the other SEC wideouts, but I mean, Texas has the guys, the talent, and the scheme to really take away a number one option. Now, I am still worried about the other guys in that receiver room for Ohio State, like Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes. They're not Jeremiah Smith, but they're elite receivers. They're Brian Hartline guys, which is really all you need to know. So Ohio State's weapons out wide are still very good, even if Smith is limited. The best front seven in the country, I believe, is in Austin, Texas, with their D-line and linebackers. Colin Simmons, Anthony Hill Jr., all those other guys, absolutely elite. Julian Sain is a new starter. That has the potential to really be a dominant win for Texas in that facet of the game. Now, Sain being at home, that's a big upgrade over this being a neutral game or even in Austin. That said, I do think that Texas's front can have a lot of success against Sain, especially if they take away Jeremiah Smith early in the game. You can maybe get him on edge. You can maybe get him moving fast in his mind and try and get him uncomfortable. for Texas on their side, Quintrevion Weisner and C.J. Baxter need to take pressure off of Arch Manning. I think the world of Arch Manning in 2026, he has all the talent in the world. In his DNA is a great quarterback play. I don't like young quarterbacks making their first starts in the SEC. I especially don't like it at Ohio State on the road. I just said that again, but, you know, I mean, this is an impossible spot for 99.9% of quarterbacks to make really their debut as the main leader of a team. Is Arch Manning that .01? He could be. He could be. I'm not sure if it's going to happen in this first week. So Weisner and Baxter need to take pressure off of Arch so he's not forced into these, you know, do-or-die situations like 3rd-and-7s, 3rd-and-8s. If those running backs can get him into 3rd-and-3s, 3rd-and-2s, that makes a world of difference for Arch Manning. They have a new left tackle, limited experience at right tackle, but Cole Huston at center and DJ Campbell at right guard are returning starters. It's a pretty new defensive line for Ohio State. They lose Jack Sawyer, they lose JTT, so there's not really those established elite pass rushers that Arch will have to be going against in this game, which is a big plus. In terms of how I think this game is going to go, with new quarterbacks, elite defenses, I have a run-heavy read on this game. I think it's a steady ground attack for both teams. Obviously, the pass is going to be involved. This is not going to be, you know, a 14-10 kind of game. But I am going under the total of 47.5. It's a low total, but when the books go low, especially in a big matchup like this, I like to go lower. And with the new quarterbacks I mentioned, with the great defenses, with the way that I think both defenses are able to scheme to take away the other side's best players, I like this to be a very low-scoring game. And this is an SEC podcast. My pick is Ohio State. Not even necessarily on the spread. It was 1.5. I think maybe it's out to 2. No, still 1.5 right now. If this game was 21-20, I wouldn't be surprised at all. So that's really kind of straying me away from taking Ohio State laying 1.5, because I think this could so easily come down to someone getting 2 field goals and the other team getting a touchdown when it matters most. So if I'm playing this game, I'm going under, and I'm taking Ohio State on the money line. But once again, Arch Manning could absolutely be the anomaly to the way that I think about quarterbacks. And if he is, the first thing I'm doing on Sunday is I'm getting on, I'm looking into my camera, and I'm saying, I was wrong about Arch. He's ready ahead of where I thought he was going to be. But for right now, I just kind of have to stick with what we've seen throughout college football history, which is this is a very, very hard spot for a young quarterback, and I don't really see him thriving this early on, especially in this spot. The other SEC early game at noon Eastern time is Tennessee versus Syracuse. The game is in Atlanta. Tennessee's laying 14 points. Both of these teams I see having regression years this year. Tennessee made the playoff last year. Now they bring in Joey Aguilar, who I've already made my feelings very clear on. I think Tennessee is a 7-5 team this year. I think they have talent. I think they're close in all these games, but they take a step back. Syracuse won 10 games last year. They lose Kyle McCord, who was their quarterback. They're just going to naturally take a step back, but I do fully believe in what Fran Brown is doing in Syracuse. But this year, I don't see them winning double-digit games again. So I think both teams take a bit of a step back. But now into this game specifically, I don't love Aguilar. Tennessee's O-line is a little inexperienced. Their run game with Deshaun Bishop and Peyton Lewis, I do think is going to be better than expected. So because of that, I think Tennessee is really able to move Syracuse around in the ground game. Their O-line is inexperienced, but they're still SEC caliber, Tennessee caliber guys. And I think that Tennessee's offensive line beats Syracuse defensive line 95% of the time. So Tennessee should be able to move the ball on the ground very well. Their defense is full of talent and should be a very strong unit. For Syracuse, I just think Tennessee is going to stifle them offensively a good bit. And I think that Tennessee laying 14 is actually a pretty good number. If this was 14 and a hook, it'd be a stay away. I think 14 flat, you can take it if you want to. And the total at 50.5, I'm trying to get myself to take the under. But Tennessee-Syracuse just seems like such a fun game where you could see points getting scored. I don't know. I think I'm a stay away from the total right now, and Tennessee laying 14 is fine. I would not at all take 14.5 because I think a 2-touchdown game is absolutely in the cards for this one. Oh, sorry, I had one more noon kick. It's Mississippi State at Southern Miss. I said that correctly. Mississippi State is going down to Hattiesburg to play their season opener. This is a really, really tricky spot because nobody is high on Mississippi State. I think most people agree that they're probably near the bottom half, or sorry, not near the bottom half, at the bottom, near the bottom of the conference this year. And for Southern Miss, I think this is sort of a one-game season for them because they're number 7 in the preseason odds to win the Sun Belt. They're not necessarily looking at, okay, we're going to go win this conference. I mean, they're telling themselves that, but realistically, I don't see them making a run at winning the Sun Belt. This is their biggest game of the year by far. It's their home opener. They play no other Power 4 opponents. This is their national TV game. They get ESPN at their home stadium to show the whole country what their program is about. And with when you put ESPN in Hattiesburg for a football game, that just feels like something magical could happen. Diving into Mississippi State just a little bit more here, 18 of their projected starters were transfers in at one point, and 11 of them are transfers in this season. But so I'm worried about that early on in the year, that many transfers. One that I'm not worried about is Fluff Bothwell. He is a sophomore running back who's coming in from South Alabama, out of the Sun Belt last year, so he's familiar with Southern Miss. He was second-team All-Sun Belt last year, played in 12 games, had 834 yards and 13 touchdowns. I think he's a guy that State's just going to have to lean on because their receiver room is full of older guys who are transferring in. They're really not that proven. But their experienced defensive line, I think, is a good benefit. So I talked a lot about how I think this is a huge game for Southern Miss. They're going to come out firing. This is the best shot they'll give somebody all year. I'm not ready to pick upset, but I'm absolutely ready to say this is a nail biter with 5 minutes left. Mississippi State, I'd be shocked if they are comfortably ahead of this game in the fourth quarter. This should be a really close game, but it's a 13.5 point spread. So I definitely think you take Southern Miss plus the points there if you want to bet this game. But I'm just not sure that I can say comfortably that Southern Miss is an upset pick for me in this one. My upset pick, however, comes 45 minutes later when Toledo goes to Kentucky. Toledo last season went to Mississippi State and absolutely kicked the hell out of them. They blew them out. It was not just like a close win. They blew them out. Toledo on the road in the SEC, that is not a new experience for them. They did this last year and they dominated. And Toledo, unlike Southern Miss, they are the favorite to win their conference. They are the favorites in the MAC. They have Tucker Gleason coming back at quarterback, who had a 24-8 touchdown to INT last year. Toledo's projected starting running back, Chip Traynham, was at Kentucky last year, so that's a fun little storyline to get. And they have Junior Vander Ross III at wide receiver, who had 85 catches for 957 yards and 5 scores last year. This Toledo team is good. This is one of those teams that, let's say Boise drops 2 games and Toledo runs through the MAC, Toledo could be the 12th seed in the playoff this year. That's how good I think this team is. Talking about Kentucky just a little bit, Zach Calzada is entering his 47th year of college football. He has an experienced receiver group around him, not necessarily one that jumps out at you on paper. They have a massive offensive line, literally, with tons of experience to snaps. They have several transfers on their front 7 defensively. So how quickly can those guys get comfortable to try and help disrupt Toledo's offense? Gleason in the passing game, Traynham in the running game, all of that. They do have Dante Dowdle coming in from Nebraska, Kentucky does, who ran the ball 143 times last year for 6-14 and 12 scores. So he's probably who I'm looking at to really be Kentucky's workhorse on offense. I think this is the last year that Stoops is coaching at Kentucky. I think this is the year that the train falls off the tracks, and I think it starts in week 1 when Toledo walks into Lexington and wins that game. This is my upset pick for the week. I mean, Toledo's catching 9.5 right now. The total is so low at 47.5, which low total, you already like betting underdogs against the number. So I'm definitely doing Toledo plus 9.5. I'm going to sprinkle something on their money line at plus 260. I won't touch the total from a betting standpoint. I think this is the first upset that we see in conference in the SEC this year. Toledo goes to Lexington and wins that game against Kentucky and kind of gives Kentucky that push off the cliff where I think they'll be this year. Then at 3:30, you get Marshall at Georgia. Let me just get this one out of the way. I'm picking Georgia. Georgia should dominate this game. I'm high on Georgia. I had them winning the conference this year. Absolutely no play on the number, laying 39.5. Total is 55.5. Do what you want with this game. I never see any value in betting games like this where the number is just so astronomically large, because Georgia could be up by 45 with a minute left. Then they put their walk-ons in that corner and Marshall scores one and you could be on the number. It's just not a good idea to play a number that high. But obviously I have Georgia winning that game handily. The big game at 3:30. Alabama at Florida State. Bama is laying 13.5. I believe that number still is. What I'm looking at in this game is the weather. It's supposed to be, there's a forecast for some potential rain at kickoff in Tallahassee. If that field is sopping wet, we saw what happened in Ireland with the way that that turf played when it was pouring. Four fumbles in the first half, a bunch of drop passes. If this game turns into a muddy, disgusting war, that gives FSU a chance. Because if this game is run the ball, longer possessions and fewer possessions, it naturally keeps the game tighter. And FSU with Castellanos running around, he's hard to tackle because of how small he is. He just sneaks right by you, and like he can go through, he can practically go under the arm of a defensive lineman. So if this game is really played on the ground in a wet, disgusting environment, that gives FSU a chance. Here's why, generally speaking, I don't give FSU a chance. Because I don't think it's going to be a full-on monsoon. I think if we do get bad weather, it's probably just for like the first half. And looking at FSU, they have 8 transfers starting on offense and 4 on the offensive line. That is not good, especially against Bama's front 7. You have that much new on your offensive line for FSU. They need to gel, but I'm not sure it's going to happen in week 1. And even if they were gelled, Bama's front 7 profiles way above FSU's O-line just because of talent. I also love Bama's secondary. So if Bama's able to get after Castellanos and make him make some panicked throws, maybe off his back foot, I really like Bama's odds to go get some interceptions and really take those balls away, force turnovers, and maybe start to extend the lead as that starts to happen. Jam Miller being lost for Bama is definitely, it is a loss. I don't want to understate that, especially if this weather comes in and it's a physical war on the ground. Richard Young is a great player. He's a really good guy behind Jam. I don't think they're going to miss a beat with Richard Young running the ball instead. And one other thing I'm looking out for in this game is that if Alabama lands the first punch or two, let's say FSU gets the ball first, 3 and out, or maybe 1 first down, but they have to punt. Bama goes down and scores and then stops FSU again. That's like 8 minutes of game time maybe, but Bama's already landed a few punches, a few jabs. Is there a part of FSU's team and fans that just kind of rolls over and says, oh man, all right, guess it's happening again? Because after last season, if you start off bad, like how does that not, that's going to creep into your mind, because it happened last year. FSU quit last year. They absolutely quit last year. And I have to be honest, I don't know if I fully believe that Norvell can totally change that culture on a dime like that to have that not happen if they're down 13-0 to Bama in the first half. I just don't know if I see that happening. So I'm reading that Bama is obviously the better team. They have more talent. And I wouldn't be shocked if we see a little bit of let up in FSU if things start to go bad. So I'm definitely taking Bama minus 13.5. I would not touch it if it hits 14. Just because of what I said about the weather, if this is a lower scoring first half, that could really burn you if you have like 14.5. But I'm definitely taking Bama minus 13.5 in this game. I do think Bama gets a big first win on the road to start off their season. Then at 4:15, you get Alabama, A&M, and Arkansas. I'm going to turn this one on just to watch Talen Green play against a bad defense for a while. It'll just be really fun to watch. Arkansas is not going to have a problem. At 6 p.m. Eastern, Illinois State at Oklahoma. Same thing. I'm going to watch this game because I'm really high on Oklahoma, and I want to see how they look early on in the season. I want to see that offense. But realistically also, for Oklahoma fans, you guys have Michigan, when I'm recording this, in 10 days. That playbook is just not going to be opened up. If Oklahoma's offense looks a little slow, maybe they don't score that much overall. That's not, I don't think that's a cause for concern about the validity of the offense. No team in this spot is going to show Michigan what they want to do offensively. This happens every year where, you know, a team has a week 1 softy and then a week 2 big game. The offenses always look a little stagnant. Why is that? Because they're not calling, they're not throwing their fastball. They're saving it for the week two opponent, who is a legit threat, and it would be a big win. So if Oklahoma starts off a little slow in this one, that's not really a cause for concern at all, I don't think. Oklahoma will handle this game easily, but if they do look a little slow, there's not a cause for concern. They're saving themselves for Michigan. 7 p.m., we get A&M hosting UTSA. Should be another nice little blowout for you guys. A&M should win this game pretty well. I'd imagine they run the ball all over UTSA with how their team profiles. That should be a good one for the Aggies. 7:45, just one out of order real quick because of the last one of the last blowouts. Ole Miss hosts Georgia State. I'm excited. I want to see Austin Simmons play, and I also want to see if that offensive line, I want to see how it looks. You're not going to get a great look at it against a Georgia State team who is not going to be an SEC team in the trenches, obviously. But it's almost more like, how concerned do we have to be? Because let's say Georgia State gets some pressure. Let's say they're able to really clog those running lanes. Then every concern about Ole Miss's offensive line is proven legit, and then some. And then you start to really worry about where that room is at and how their offense might look. But if they're able to handle Georgia Southern, start to mesh a little bit, get used to where each guy's going to be playing, that'd be a big plus. Two more games at 7 Eastern. Long Island at Florida. The pictures going around comparing Florida's team picture to Long Island's is hysterical. I went to a very small high school. It looks like my football team. It looks like the team that I played on. So that game is going to be awful to watch if you're a Long Island fan. I expect Lagway to play maybe two or three drives and they'll get him out of there. Florida should not have their starters in for very long. Should be a cakewalk. Charleston Southern at Vanderbilt. I think same thing. It might not be it's not going to be as big of a blowout, right? Because Vandy, I don't think, has that explosiveness that these other teams do. But Vandy should handle this pretty well. I'm excited to see how Pavia looks. I want to see how Cedric Alexander looks. I want to see how their defense plays. Vandy could definitely set the tone early on in this season with a dominant win against Charleston Southern. Really keep inspiring some optimism. All right, we are through the games that no one cares about. Here's the game that I think everybody cares about. LSU at Clemson. Clemson is favored by 3.5 right now. 7:30 Eastern on ABC. I don't know if this game is going to be close. That's my boldest take for this week. Even bolder than Toledo beating Kentucky, I think. I'll get to that in a second, but let's just cap the game super quick. LSU, offensively, Garrett Nussmeier and those absurd wideouts are terrifying for any defense to look at. You have Caden Durham back for his sophomore year. And Brian Kelly and LSU, look, they've heard all of this week one talk. They've heard all of it, how they can't win in week one. They always start off with a loss. You lose momentum. They want to end that stereotype so bad. Because there's a lot of pressure on LSU to go get this one done. Because they're supposed to make the playoff. Nussmeier is supposed to be in Heisman conversations. If they don't, the same conversations are going to come up again. We're going to have Brian Kelly slamming the table at the press conference again. And maybe it's a little bit of a hyperbole, but I almost wonder if Kelly's seat gets a little warm. I wonder if it gets just like he turned it up just 2 degrees on the thermostat if they lose this game. Because at some point, you've got to win a week one game against a big opponent. You just have to. Here's why I don't think LSU is going to, and why I'm not sure it's ever going to look like they really have a chance in the second half. Their offensive line for LSU, I've said it 1,000 times this summer, but they have they lost four of their 5 starters to the draft last year along the offensive line. LSU's offensive line is not going to be bad. They have talented guys coming in, but logically it is going to take a step back. Nussmeier already had problems throwing picks in big games, multi-pick games against Bama, Ole Miss, A&M. When the competition leveled up and the stage leveled up, Nussmeier threw more interceptions. This Clemson defense is stupid. Peter Woods and TJ Parker on the defensive line could both be top 10 picks. You have a secondary headlined by Avion Terrell, who is the younger brother of AJ Terrell. Coming in there, he had 2 picks last year. Khalil Barnes had 4 picks last year. Ashton Hampton, Kylan Griffin, Shelton Lewis. All these guys have experience playing in the secondary. It's a very good secondary. And then at linebacker, you have Sammy Brown, who's a 5-star guy. He's a sophomore. His freshman year, he had 47 tackles and 5 sacks. Also, Wade Wood as at linebacker, who forced 3 fumbles last year, had a pick and 3 sacks. This Clemson defense looks like the units that they had when they were winning national championships. It just does. And offensively, it's the same thing. what Clemson's been missing on offense from their title teams is really elite receiver play. And this year, I think they have it. They get Antonio Williams back. He's the veteran guy in that room. TJ Moore and Bryant Wesco Jr. are back for their sophomore years. You have Tyler Brown, another young guy in that room. And they bring in Tristan Smith from Southeast Missouri. He is a 6'5 alien kind of guy who had 76 catches for 934 yards and 6 scores last year. On their offensive line, their youngest player is a redshirt junior with 18 games of experience. Other than that, they have 3 grad guys and 1 redshirt senior. This Clemson team is unbelievable roster-wise. Absolutely unbelievable. And just to add some more context to this, this Clemson crowd, this is really the first night game that they've had to get up for in years. In the past few years, when they've hosted South Carolina, they've been noon kickoffs. FSU in 2023 was a noon kickoff. Notre Dame, that same year, they were ranked noon kickoff. Death Valley has not had a ranked-on-ranked top 10 matchup at night in a long time. And I think that it's going to remind a lot of people what that place is as an away environment for teams. And for Dabo specifically, this really is an FU year for him to the entire country. Because I think that if he does win this year, if he wins a lot, they could win the championship this year. And if he does that, it's like he's just flipping off the entire country saying, you all said I was dead because I wouldn't go in the portal because I had a few years where we didn't win our conference, God forbid. I mean, if Dabo does what I think he can do this year with Clemson, that is the biggest middle finger to the entire college football world. And I think it's going to start off with a dominant win against LSU. Here's why I think it's going to be so dominant. Because if you go back to the Super Bowl this past season, Chiefs-Eagles, the Chiefs were favored by a point or two in that game. They had elite offensive weapons everywhere. Everyone thought it was going to be a close game, back and forth, back and forth. Philly's defensive line killed them. Literally killed them. And the game wasn't close. The Chiefs were dead on arrival in the Super Bowl. That was incomprehensible to say before we saw what we saw. I think the same thing is going to happen in this Clemson-LSU game. I think Clemson's defensive line is going to absolutely dominate this game, make life horrible for Nussmeier. I think they're going to speed him up. He's going to have to make quick throws, quick decisions that are not going to work out well because of the nature of what a quick throw under pressure is. I have Clemson winning this game by at least 13 points. And LSU, I think, is going to be able to bounce back from it. I still believe they'll have a good year. But this spot specifically, I think, is so bad for LSU. I just think it's really, really bad. So LSU is going to have to deal with a lot of the talk after this week. If what I think is going to happen is true, they're going to have to deal with a lot of talk about how they just still can't get it done in week one against good teams, how they're still not over that hump, and how Brian Kelly still hasn't gotten his team to where he's supposed to have them. Then the last SEC game of week one on Sunday at 3 Eastern, Virginia Tech in South Carolina in Atlanta. I love South Carolina so much. I love their offense. Lenore Sellers, we know who he is. Nick Harbor, this is the year that he turns from a great athlete at receiver to a great receiver. And Roswell Faison this week, their 1,000-yard running back in the transfer portal, got cleared to play. It was about time. This could not have taken any longer. They waited until game week to clear him, but what matters is that they did. So now Carolina has 2 unbelievable runners in Sellers and Faison in the backfield to really help open up the downfield passing game to guys like Harbor and Mazzeo Bennett. Sellers is looking way more confident in camp. He's in command of the offense. I'm excited about their defense despite what a lot of the common belief is, because Dylan Stewart is still an alien. I don't think he'll be as productive this year because he has less help, but he'll still get his. Justin Akeronkwo, linebacker from Bama, is great. Judge Collier and Jalen Kilgore in the secondary are very good players. They were both second-team All-SEC last year. And then for the Hokies, Kyren Drones is still there at quarterback, and I like him a lot. He's a mobile guy. He's a real dual-threat guy. There's not a lot of proven production at wide receiver for them. There were 2 transfers who are projected to start. But they also have a transfer running back in Tarion Stewart, who's coming from Bowling Green. He had 898 yards last year. So this offense is solid. Carolina's is great. And I don't trust Virginia Tech to stop South Carolina really with any sort of consistency. So betting this game, I would go over 50.5 as my favorite play, because I think Carolina scores 35. and Drones is good enough as a quarterback. There's enough talent on that offense for the Hokies to score 21 or 24. So I'd go over 50.5, and then I'd take South Carolina laying what I believe is still 7.5. But I can check that in real time as I'm doing this. Yes, it's still 7.5. So I'm playing both of those. I'm playing the over. I'm playing South Carolina. A little more confidence on that total at 50.5. But I do think Carolina has their way. I think Carolina goes 1-0. And they're off to a good start to what I believe could be a playoff year for the Gamecocks. So there we go. There's every week one SEC game talked through to the point where people would care. I don't think anybody is mad that I skipped over Alabama, A&M, and Arkansas. But if you are, I'd be happy to send you a private podcast. But anyways, yeah, there we go. I'm recording this on Wednesday. I'll probably put it up today too. So we are just 2 days away from SEC football in 2025. I can't wait. I hope you guys are just as excited as I am. Man, let's get going. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas, and I will see you guys next episode.